Michael Henry for his work rights. Never didn't explain it really that much in the article, but I see basically what he is alluding to. So that my distributed capacitance wound up at 126 PF for the 6 foot. So you see, there comes the situation, and what did I use? I used the capacitance. I used a different variable capacity here. I had to use one from 50 to 248 in this situation for resonating it. So this is basically, I noticed that this seems to be a rule of thumb, keeping on the 0.1 wavelength and keeping it within up to approximately 15 microhenry tick over.
I'm doing a Google search right now on Belden 8241 to see what it looks like. And it looks like it's similar to RG59 cable. And why should they stop working correctly at anything greater than 15 microhenry? Maybe the answer is that for the frequencies we're talking about, whatever you do to make it more than 15 microhenry is simultaneously going to make it more than a tenth of a wavelength long, so it starts developing other kinds of directional characteristics. Maybe that's what's going on. Either that, or because the capacitance you're putting across it to resonate it is so small that now it doesn't have sufficient tuning to reject undesired frequencies. I'm guessing it could be one of those two. What do you think, Mel?
I don't know, really. Yes, that would be something more to look into, you know, if I didn't have a limited amount of time to do all these experiments. So I like to, you know, do a little bit further experiment, but really, what is the criteria? How did they arrive at 0.1 wavelength as the criteria, Dick? Over.
I've got a pretty good guess there. Say, for instance, you and I started off with a half wavelength horizontal dipole mill, and you know what that pattern would look like. Broadside pattern, and pretty good nulls off the end of the wire. Now if I start curving that dipole into a circle, as I start closing the gap at the far end of the circle, far end from where I seated, I'll have to shorten up the circle a little bit because my strain capacitance will soon be lower than desired frequency. But a circular loop, one wavelength in diameter, half wavelength in circumference, and open at one end, is going to have an antenna pattern. Think about that. I think it's going to favor the forward direction toward the gap. From the feed point toward the gap, that's the direction it's going to favor. So you'll develop a significant front-to-back ratio. Now, if you want that front-to-back ratio, that's fine. But as you start making the loop smaller and smaller in circumference and keep increasing the capacitance across the gap to keep resonating it and keep impedance matching it, at the feed point, the antenna becomes more and more omnidirectional. It loses its front-to-back ratio. And now it has equal response when it's parallel to the ground to a horizontally polarized signal that arrives from any angle. So to have all the current flowing around the loop in essentially co-phase so that you get omnidirectional patterns, that will only happen when the circumference is approximately a tenth of a wavelength. That's my guess as to what's going on. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, one other question then. If this be the case, why can I actually see a difference from tilting the loop? I can see it by, you know, turning it, yes, in a vertical pattern, but why am I seeing, actually telling somebody that, gee, you're coming in here at 75 degrees, they're using a horizontal, they're vertical, and I'm telling them we're receiving them better on the loop in the horizontal position. What am I doing, Dick? I seem to be now changing the rules of this operation of the loop. So I'm violating something now. Over.
Okay. You're getting a signal that 90% of the time is coming to you from a deflection from the ionosphere. That's factor number one. Second of all, when that signal gets into your environment, you're not sitting in the middle of the ocean or in the middle of a great big open football field. You're in a radio-wise, slightly cluttered environment. A lot of nearby houses, power lines, plumbing and power wiring within your house, bathtubs, file cabinets, all kinds of things. So you're getting all kinds of crazy reflections in your environment after the signal has been deflected by the ionosphere and Faraday rotated by the ionosphere. So despite the fact that the guy you're talking to in Pennsylvania tells you he's launching a pure horizontal wave, by the time it's been through that jazz that we just described and it arrives at your QTH, it's a very different wave polarization-wise and angle of arrival-wise than was originally issued. That's my guess. Very similar to what happens when I'm listening to this repeater in the morning with my ICQAT handy-talkie. I know hands down that the Limonk repeater is within 1 or 2 degrees purely vertically polarized at the Glen Ord site where it's located. But by the time that signal gets into my house in Huntington, on top of the hill in Huntington, that I have, you would think, nearly line of sight to the repeater, not counting the local trees. And in that direction, I do have one house across the street, but it's 200 yards away. So you would think I would get a purely vertically polarized wave. I can set my handy-talkie on the counter in the bathroom, vertical, and I hear a very weak signal that fades in and out as I walk around the room. If I lay it down horizontal on that wooden counter, it's a full micro counter, but as I lay it horizontal, the signal comes up 25 dB or so. Beautiful, strong signal. And the same when I transmit back to the repeater with that handy-talkie. Beautiful signal when I hold it horizontal, but vertical, I'm very weak in the repeater. So, again, by the time the signal sifts in that environment and gets to me, it's very different than what's launched. Some of that is what I think you're experiencing. Well, thank you.
Okay, I agree with you. This is Jason J.E. Wine, of course, about Faraday rotation, especially on 75 meters. However, but the type of antenna, the theoretical operation of this antenna should be in the vertical. In other words, it should be most effective in a vertical pattern that my lady there showing. There's no mention of ever tilting me. So why, you know, I can't understand because of the type of antenna that, you know, the way it's laid out, that you would think that tilting it would have no effect. Basically, maybe that's the right word, that I shouldn't see such pronounced effect, I think, by tilting it, Dick, over.
Tilting changes the polarization, KD to BD, John.
That's for sure. But let me ask you this question, Mel. When you're talking to your buddy in Pennsylvania, WB3 or WB2 FRY, is the second base portion of the antenna tilted toward him or away from him or to the left or to the right? That's question number one. Second of all, again, when you rotate the antenna for best, and by the way, there's two separate answers here. You can give me an answer where you tilt and rotate the antenna to get the strongest S-meter reading on his signal. And so, where do you tilt second base, toward or away, left or right? And when you do rotation, where does first base end up, toward him or away from him, so to speak, or at right angle to him? When you tune for the greatest signal strength. Then when you tune for the greatest signal-to-noise ratio, again, where is second base, where is first base, and so on. Thank you, Mel.
Well, that's why it doesn't make sense here. Because, yes, I can understand with them changing the base, everything. That is understandable. But what I'm doing is I'm turning the loop now until I take his signal as best as possible. I get the variables, you know, I get everything set up as best as possible. I now start to tilt the loop downward so that the loop now, I say second base now, let's say that at times, in fact, at times, another thing don't make much sense, is why a signal will come in broadside to the loop, which it shouldn't be. It should be actually, I should actually be using the loop that you'd be able to point the diamond. In other words, if the loop is spanning vertically, and say first base and third base would be the cross axis of it. And I point that cross axis at him, and that's when the signal is peaking at times. Now, let's say it is peaking at that time that way, with, I could say the cross axis of base, third base, first base, pointing approximately somewhere west of me. Now I start tilting the loop, so that second base between, I'm tilting between home plate, the axis between home plate and second base is beginning to go down. At times I get the signal better, but not as strong as when I have a receiving situation that I can turn the antenna at times. And so that the axis of first to third base, that axis, is now, that axis is parallel to the west instead of pointing at the west. In other words, now it's parallel, going parallel to the west. When I get that type of signal condition, I now tilt the loop so that from home base to second base is gradually decreasing in angle towards the horizontal. That I know. When I'm getting that kind of condition, I just, I know right away. I tell my friend George, tonight you'll be able to hear me without the amplifier on. And he always says, yep, tonight you're pounding. And I can always tell that exactly how I got the signal, how the conditions are coming in on that loop, exactly how good he's going to hear me and how good I'm going to hear him. Take over.
KD2BD.
KD2BD. Going to message you after I make a quick guess. As you tilt home plate toward second base, you start tilting it downward so that it becomes almost parallel to the earth, and the third base versus first base, that axis is broadside to him. I think that's the best alignment in order to get best reception of a horizontally polarized signal. That's my guess. Even though he may think he's launching vertical to you, I think it's arriving in your backyard horizontal. KD2BD, start off with your name, sir, and then proceed with your comment.
Hey, thanks. The K2RW and the TechNet from KD2BD. Name is John. I agree with everything you're saying as far as polarization changes and things of that sort. I think Mel's problem was answered a little bit this week and maybe last week or the week before with Frank, WA2ILD, when he mentioned the phenomenon he noticed with the high degree of coupling he noticed between his 80-meter antennas. Well, Mel's using a loop inside for reception. He has a horizontal loop 40 feet up above the air, which is probably radiating half the signal it's receiving. So I think what he's seeing is not only just clutter from the immediate surrounding area around the loop, you know, metal cabinets and things like that, and house wiring. But he's got that huge loop 40 feet in the air, which is radiating a lot of signal, too. So he's seeing the vector sum of everything altogether. K2RW on the TechNet from KD2BD.
Interesting comment, John. Interesting. Just think, Mel, you've got this extremely large effective capture area, resonant circuit, full wavelength loop, 40 feet above you. And the radar cross-section of it is probably 20 decibels louder than any other piece of metal in your house, and probably 20 decibels louder than any piece of consolidated Edison Con Ed wiring, because the wiring is not resonant, but that loop is. That would be fascinating for you to start twisting the controls on your transmitting loop at the same time that you're tilting your internal, your inside the house receiving loop, and see if anything changes. So when you twist the controls on the transmitting loop, does anything change inside? That would be a fun experiment. Thank you, Mel.
Oh, yes, I thought of that. Interaction between the two antennas. Oh, yes, I thought of that. I have made those different, you know, I have the outside loop, one wavelength loop, as I said, is fed with 600 ohm feeders, and it goes into the Johnson kilowatt matchbox, link coupled, and it has two big knobs on it. The box is bigger than the biggest piece of equipment, literally on the table there, and it's, you know, fairly large weight. Johnson constructed that. They were very liberal with the case, the size, and the components. So by turning the controls on that, I wanted to see if there's any kind of interaction, of anything I could detect. And no, I couldn't. I turned them every which way and everything, and I terminated it with 50 ohms, just figuring that maybe, I doubted that was had any effect. I've tried, you know, a number of different ideas. I couldn't see so much coupling as I would have expected on the inside loop. It's there is definitely something there, but nothing that I could really say is very definitive. I worried about the situation that with, you know, kilowatt plus going into that loop most of the time, because of the conditions that we experienced on 75 meters, that if I had this loop connected with the amplifier, I have the RF amplifier that I could say terminate boosting, has at least a 10 dB voltage gain on it, and a very high dynamic range also on the Q multiplier. So I worried about hooking that to a regular, you know, a new receiver. So I'm using the Collins 7584 receiver, you know, with a complete tube radio, tube front end, of course, and also that I don't want to take any chances of doing any damage to any of the other type of newer equipment. So I tried a number of ideas, seeing if I could see any kind of really definitive, but there may be some interaction. But if that be the case, what the heck, why am I getting, you know, different configurations on different conditions, different nights, different configurations? I mean, when I go from broadside, if you want to call, between first base and third base as the cross angle of the loop, at times broadside west with that, or other times I turn it and I'm pointing to that when it, the point of it is turning, you know, or I'm pointing westward with that axis. Other times I'm pointing north-south instead of east-west with that axis. Now, when I get the axis sort of parallel to him, north-south the axis, so that's, in other words, broadside, east-west, or, and I start to tilt it, when I see that signal is peaking up, down towards the horizontal, I know that night has terrific copy on me. Never fails. That's not over. I bet you fire up. We'll fire, and it's armchair copy, Dick. Over.
Yeah, your thumb was getting a little bit tired at the tail end, and you dropped out a couple of times for a fraction of a second. Since Faraday rotation, the magnitude of Faraday rotation is proportional to 1 over frequency squared or frequency cubed. I think it's frequency squared. It's obvious that as you go down in frequency from, let's say, 432, the total amount of Faraday rotation becomes huge. Therefore, that signal that goes through ionospheric reflection to get from Pennsylvania to Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, I'm not sure exactly how many times, but it is possible it rotates through that ionosphere a number of times. Therefore, minor changes in the magnetic field and the altitude and the density of the plasma that you and I call ionosphere, changes in all of that can easily change whether you twist three times or three and a quarter times or three and a half times. Therefore, the angle of arrival and the polarization of arrival in your house, I suspect, is very little affected by the metallic objects in your house. The metallic objects in your house, here's the way it works. Radar cross-section of a flat sheet of metal is the equation 4 pi a squared over lambda squared. A is the projected area, but it's divided by lambda squared. So therefore, when you get down to a frequency like 80 meters, your lambda is becoming so big that when you square it and divide it into the rest of that equation, you get an extremely small number. So the bottom line is that the number of square wavelengths or radar cross-section at 80 meters of your file cabinet, I think, is equivalent to sitting in the ocean. Very, very minor perturbation. So your biggest effect is going to be the ionosphere. The second biggest effect is going to be your outside resonant loop, and you have the ability to raise and lower that loop. That also, I suspect, would make a difference. These are some of my guesses. Back to you, Mel, KQRIW.
Okay. Now, you think that the possibility that tight in the wall conduit, you know, wire and everything, do you think that have an effect on it? Because I'll tell you why I went ahead and I did another experiment. I took the loop one night, about a week ago. It was one night, it was pretty cold, but, you know, I have to do an experiment. Especially I used to do antennas and all kinds of weather, you know, when I get my mind upset on it. I took the loop antenna, believe it or not, and I put it out on my patio deck, which is off the master bedroom, and I ran the cable through upstairs. My XYL, good thing she's not here right now. She had a meeting tonight. But I thought for sure it was going to cause the coax cable running right through the bedroom, right through the master bedroom, out to the deck out there, which is on the second floor. And I wanted to see if I got it away. In other words, out on that deck, it's away from the internal part of the house. And I wanted to see now what happened. And I was running back and forth, basically, trying to, you know, see if I get any kind of different reaction. Couldn't see a difference, whether it's in the house or outside, Dick. How could that be? No difference, over.
Which is identical to that paragraph I read earlier. I'm going to read it again if I can find it. Which said, where is it? Shielded loops are not affected noticeably by nearby objects. And by the way, this is the very article with the picture of Gene DeMore, W1CKK. Right under the figure 26 in my book, which is a slightly older version than yours, right under that picture, which shows the schematic of the loop with the split in the shield and the 400 picofarad capacitor, right under that the paragraph says, shielded loops are not affected noticeably by nearby objects, and therefore they can be installed indoors or out after being tuned to resonance. That's the first sentence. The next sentence, moving them from one place to another does not significantly affect the tuning. They're saying it. I'm saying it in a different way. The ionosphere can make a huge difference to you as to what you get from day to day. But your wiring in your house, your file cabinet, everything else, in radar cross-section rated in square meters at the 80-meter band is an extremely minor perturbation because radar cross-section is a constant divided by lambda squared. When you get down to that lower frequency, the lambda is a huge number. The square of the lambda is a huge number. When you divide a huge number into something, the you get a very small number. So I'm saying the reflective quality of the stuff in your house ain't there. It's transparent. You're going to get a little bit of reflection from your full wavelength loop 40 feet in the air, and that's it. Your biggest changes are going to be not where you locate that loop. I'll bet you can locate it anywhere in Manhattan Beach, and you'll get the exact same response on that particular day. The only thing that really changes is the way the ionosphere is affecting you that particular day. What is the local magnetic field, and how dense is the ionosphere, and how high up it is, which is a big function of what is the solar wind like out of the sun that particular day. I'll bet you could look at the A index, the K index. You could go to the solar satellite, I can't think of the name of the darn thing right now, and study that data and correlate it with what you measure when you're listening to your buddy in Pennsylvania, and I bet you're going to find a correlation. K2RIW.
Hey, now I'm going to bring up a question, because now I don't know if we can answer this. Last week, Rich N2EO asked me, he says he likes to get on also 75 meters, and he's also plagued by this noise and all. And I told him about, you know, how I'm able to do, you know, a lot of noise canceling by this method. And he asked me, he says, how do you think it would work if I put it down the basement? Now, that's the question. How does the height have an effect on this? Would it work down a basement, Dick, over?
Absolutely. I say if you take that loop antenna and you go from the third floor wooden attic of your house and bring it all the way down to the basement, I'll bet you you'll see almost no change as to the orientation that gives you the maximum signal. That's my prediction. This is a normal basement. I will admit that if you have a really deep sub-basement and you locate the loop very close to the forward wall of the direction where you're getting the signal from, I know that in the basement you're going to get a weaker signal in S meter deflection, but I think the orientation of the loop, the orientation of the loop that gives you the maximum signal, I think is going to be the same. Again, you think the dirt around your basement is a big perturbation. On VHF, yay verily. On HF, I think that dirt isn't there. You're sitting in the middle of this great big hole that you call basement, and except for a little bit of attenuation you get around the perimeter, I think that huge wave gets into your loop through that basement, almost as if the ground isn't there except for a little bit of attenuation. That'll be an interesting experiment for you to try, Mel.
M2EO, very interesting.
There he is. That's the man that asked the question. One other question. Now, I know that this is a receiving loop. What would happen if I ever put any RF into it? What would be the effect, you think, take over?
Okay. When you put a substantial amount of RF into it, because it is less than a tenth of a wavelength long, therefore the Q is going to be extremely high, you better make that capacitor out of some pretty substantial stuff with a pretty wide spacing. Otherwise, you're going to arc it over. On top of that, when you transmit into that loop, it's quite small, and if you stand very close to it, the bad news is you're getting a fair amount of field into your body. The good news is that 1.8 megacycles goes through your body, 99% of it goes through without being absorbed. So maybe that's a wash. So I think you could transmit into it as long as you've done a good job on the capacitor. And the way you can tell is, first of all, when you run a T down for 3 minutes, it doesn't arc over. And number two, you lift up the key after 3 minutes and touch everything. If it's cold, you've got it made. Under those conditions, I think you can transmit it to that antenna mill. Back to you.
M2EO.
Hey, Rich, recognize. Well, just one comment before that. Let's say I kept the power low enough. Let's go to my QRP rig, my little 10 watt, so I won't off the capacitor. past, I can well imagine that I'm going to have to, you know, you're putting power into it, you're really going to have a high voltage capacitor there, and your back is going to have for something of the sort. I know that you also show a number of methods of making high voltage capacitors in the section on loop antennas. But the point is, okay, let's say I use the QRP rig. Judging by when I measure without, let's just basic loop, forget about the Q multipliers and all those goodies. If a number of times I listened on the basic 12-foot square loop and the signal I heard coming in on that basic loop inside the house was stronger than my outside one wavelength loop. Now, again, if I went down to the power that I could comfortably run in that, do you think that I'll be heard as good, better, or what? In other words, if I'm using the receiving as a criteria, what happens if you transmit on the same situation? Will these loops actually transmit as well as something like a one wavelength out at their time that you can say, gee, my little compact thing in my my apartment is sufficient for getting on HF bands, Nick, or what? I mean, is there such a thing, over?
I say the answer is yes, sometimes. If your internal loop really gets a bigger S-meter deflection under any condition that you can make inside your house, if that gives you a bigger S-meter deflection than your outdoor loop, then by the law of reciprocity, he's got to get a stronger signal from you when you transmit into that inner loop. But there's one catch, and that is because Faraday rotation is a function of 1 over lambda squared, correction, 1 over frequency squared. Yes, 1 over frequency squared. I think I've been saying it lambda squared. Lambda squared is radar cross-section. In Faraday rotation, it's 1 over frequency squared. Your frequency is a very low number compared to VHF. Therefore, you're getting a huge amount of Faraday rotation on 80 meters on the average day. As such, the one thing that violates reciprocity up the kazoo is Faraday rotation. You may be getting a beautifully horizontally polarized signal on your loop in your house when you're receiving. And let's assume he's transmitting vertical and you're getting a beautiful horizontal signal. Obviously, by the tilting of the loop, you can confirm that. You would therefore think that if you transmit with your essentially horizontally polarized loop, that he's going to see a vertical signal. Because reciprocity failure always happens with Faraday rotation. The possibility exists that he transmits vertical, you receive horizontal. You set up the antenna for horizontal, you transmit horizontal, and he will see horizontal. And because his antenna is set up for vertical, he's going to say, you sound terrible. So the reciprocity failure of the ionospheric Faraday rotation is going to confuse the hell out of you when you do this. But you choose the right day, the right ionospheric site. I feel pretty confident that you can transmit into that loop, and he's going to hear a pretty nice signal out of you on some of those days. Back to you, Mel.
All right, before I make another comment, let Richard pick it up. N2EO, go ahead, please. This is K2KEY and K2RIW with the tech.
Okay, but we're going to repeat.
Well, wait a minute now. There's another point I want to make. When it comes to compact antennas inside the house, whether you're using a loop antenna or that Isotron, a very famous antenna, which is a kind of modified loop, compact antennas inside the house under certain conditions can work like a Tron. Otherwise, Isotron wouldn't be selling that thing. N2EO, K2RIW.
Very interesting, Dick. What Mel may want to consider is using a QRP rig like, you know, one of the Tentec Argonaut Series 5 Watt. CW rigs, play around and see what kind of results he gets on transmit. What I wanted to ask you, Dick, the characteristics you're describing of that loop that Mel has on receive, what are the differences, if any, using a loop stick? In other words, similar to what's the broadcast band portable transistor radio.
A loop stick antenna of the right material, the right number of turns, resonating, is going to work like a charm as a receiving antenna. But the loop stick antenna as a transmitter has a problem, a serious problem. And that is that ferrite material of the loop stick easily saturates when you put power into it. So that particular antenna, you can receive with it very nicely. You can tilt it in all kinds of ways and maximize the signal. But you can't transmit through it in general without using a real big piece of that material. That's my guess on that one. Back to you, Rich, and then pass it over to Mel.
Okay, Dick, I would agree with you on that. I would just use it for receipt. One that's been on the market for years and years and years is called the LA-1 by Palomar Engineers. And interestingly enough, they must have realized the properties of tilting, because their loop not only rotates, it can be tilted, it's calibrated in degrees. Their loop, what they sell is a, it's got an RF amplifier for receive, and you plug in the particular loop stick. They make them for, DXC on the broadcast band, and they make three loop sticks you can plug in. One for the broadcast band, one for, I believe it's 160 and 80, and then they make one for 40 meters. Plugs into the LA-1 stand. I'm going to turn it back to you, Dick. You can turn it over to Mel. I wonder how you think characteristics of that on receive would compare or be different to Mel's loop with the capacitor at the top.
Darn good question. And there I don't know. And that's something we as a group are going to have to experiment with. Would the ferrite loop work differently? There is a section of Chapter 5 of the ARL antenna book that clearly shows you pictures of a ferrite loop. And it's got a photograph as to how the magnetic field, and my book is on Chapter 5, there 6, a page 5, there 6, and 5, there 7. It shows you how the magnetic core of the ferrite gathers magnetic field, concentrates it, and the loop of wire around it, therefore gets a very nice signal from it, particularly when it resonates. And is that going to work better or worse? The nice thing about Mel's open air loop is that by keeping it under a tenth of a wavelength, he's got an omnidirectional pattern. In other words, if he laid the loop flat to the parallel to the ground, and he's listening to horizontally polarized signals, whether the signal comes from the north, the west, the east, or the south, in theory, he should have equal response. The ferrite, although it's a beautiful way of making a compact antenna, I guarantee that that ferrite material has a certain equivalent loss tangent to it. The stuff is not perfect. The air that's inside of loop of Mel's loop is damn close to perfect. And as long as he's using a good quality of cable that doesn't have a whole lot of distributed resistance, he has no loss mechanism. Whereas the ferrite is going to have a little bit more loss. When you're receiving, and you're concerned most with signal-to-noise ratio, whether or not you get an S6 or an S5.5 deflection almost doesn't matter. What does matter is how many S units lower is the noise. And that's a matter of orientation. So even if there is a little bit of loss in the ferrite, for the most cases in this frequency, you don't care. you would care if you're transmitting that ferrite, if it's got any loss at all, it's going to run hot and waste some of the transmit power. K2KUI, K2LIW, those were opinions.
Hey, question. A ferrite loop, would it also be, you know, on the same mu, the permeability, would it be follow along similar to what a toroidal type of core would act like, Dick, over?
I think the answer is yes. And so maybe you're about to tell me that you can buy ferrite cores that have very good loss characteristics. And so if you are able to buy the ferrite as a rod out of the same material, you should be able to get some weight. Wait a minute now, hold on. In the case of a toroid, all that magnetic field is very nicely confined inside of the ferrite toroid. Inside of a loop, a hell of a lot of the magnetic field that's trying to flow through the ferrite has to close the loop by going out into air from the tips back to the other tip, from one tip back to the other tip. Magnetic field lines always have to close on themselves. So the fact that the straight-out rod has a substantial amount of the propagation of the magnetic field taking place in air makes it a very different situation. The good news is it's unshielded, and therefore you can receive the outside signal. Whereas if you tried receiving the signal on a ferrite toroid, it is so well shielded that I'll bet you're going to see a 30 dB less signal. Back to you, Mel.
The reason I brought up ferrite rods and toroidals, because they have different mix of toroids, you know, depending on what you're going to use them for, you know. You see the Amazon lists a whole bunch of different mixes. So I was wondering, now they have rods also, rods for different use. I was wondering if you've got the right mix for that particular band. Is it possible, because of the configuration of, a good one-to-one mix, something that gives you very good high view, high permeability, I should say, would it be effective? I mean, could you, in other words, have the control of the effectiveness just by the correct ferrite mix, over?
Okay, I've got a guess as to what's going on here. And by you studying the materials and the shapes you can buy it in, you may be able to confirm or deny my speculation. Here's my speculation. In the case of a toroid core, because the magnetic field is so nicely confined, I can get the equivalent mu to be pretty high, even though the basic mu of the material is not so high. The advantage of that is that high mu material tends to be lossier. And so I can use medium-low mu material in the case of a toroid and still get some pretty nice operation because it is a closed magnetic band that does not include an air gap. Whereas the ferrite rod, because so much of the closed magnetic field is through air, for it to work well, it has to be a higher mu material. And the higher mu material maybe is more lossy. So the ferrite rod maybe is a lossy material. Lossier material, when you're receiving, you don't care. Because the band is so darn noisy, you only care about signal-to-noise ratio. But when you're transmitting, you will care. So it's possible that very few people, except for the QR people, it's possible that very few people have transmitted substantial amounts of power through a ferrite rod because of the loss it has. That's a guess. Thank you, Mel.
Okay, this is K2KUI, all right? Agreeable on that. Now, the other question. So you're saying that this open-air loop that I'm using is most likely a more efficient way of receiving versus a ferrite type of rod type of antenna, indoor antenna receiving system. Now, the question is, I am making this thing basically on a square. What would happen instead, you say, gee, I can't stand this thing up, all right, it's not that big, this thing is, I can say, 3 foot on a square, so it stands up about 4.5, 5 feet from where it is you know, when standing on the on its mount, I have the camera mount set down low, so the helmet's touching my 10-foot ceiling at the top. I raised it up and, you know, got it comfortable so it can turn in the room and everything. But let's say I said, listen, I can't do it this way. How about if I take this thing and, well, most of my contacts between, you know, this person and myself, if I orient this thing, take it apart and just hang it. In other words, just hang it up some way, you know. In other words, forget about the frame. Make it, or put a couple of them in facing different directions. Does it have to be in this configuration, or will it, or can I tweak it maybe in some other configuration, Dick, over?
Okay, the main function of the loop is the perimeter of the wire is most of your resonance phenomena. Your reception phenomena is mostly the area inside the loop of wire. So whether you make the loop of wire diamond-shaped, square-shaped, triangular-shaped, round in shape, oval in shape, as long as you keep the perimeter in the same ballpark and keep the enclosed area in the same ballpark, I say you're gonna see very little difference in the tuning and very little difference in the performance. Once you now have the freedom to make it almost any shape you like, as long as there really is some enclosed area, that gives you all kinds of abilities to make it out of flimsy, slightly light, slightly stiff materials, hang it by threads from the ceiling if you want to, and those threads go through a little bit of pulleys, and you pull those pulleys up and down in order to change the orientation. I think you can get rid of some of the bamboo if you want to and make it a real skeleton structure. Make it the very large equivalent of a microfilm indoor aeroplane. K2KEY, KQLIW.
Oh, that's what I'm saying now. What happens, like, again, yeah, we got 12 foot of RG-15. Just as you said, I tie it to the ceiling. If I have it folded over, it drops 6 feet, exactly. Now, instead of at the bottom, I put the capacitor the same way, and I say I separate, I just stick a little piece of stick between it there, well, say, a foot of stick. So now this thing is going to be a bigger lift and all. Is it going to really work the same way, Dick, over?
When you make it into an ellipse versus a circle, you're substantially decreasing the area enclosed by the wire. That area enclosed by the wire is the primary factor that determines the amount of magnetic flux from that wave you want to receive that is enclosed by your loop of wire. That is the gain of the antenna. So you can either close up the loop by making it into a skinny ellipse, or you could make it a smaller loop of wire, smaller circumference loop of wire. In either case, I don't think the signal-to-noise ratio will change much, but your S-meter will go down to a lower numbers when you change, when you decrease the enclosed area. That's my guess, Mel.
Wonder, you know, how much can I squeeze it before you see a, you know, appreciable loss? If you could put it through like I have an RF amplifier, I get more gain than I possibly need. You'd be amazed. I have to back off the RF gain on the RF amplifier I'm using. I'm using a couple of Vortex. And the amount of gain is phenomenal. It would overload the receiver. That's an old receiver, column 7584. So I'm saying to myself, so let's say even if I was to lose a couple of dBs, if I can take this thing and narrow it down, gee, you can stick it in the corner of the room out of the way, you know, and give it a little turn and a little twist, or you can send it, like you say, with a couple of pulleys, small little pulleys, and pull it up and do all kinds of manipulation, hang it horizontal or whatever you wanted to do with it. I mean, where is the trade-off point? I mean, how much do you think you're going to be able to squeeze before you're going to see such a, you know, decrease in the performance that you say, well, that's no longer usable, Dick? Is there a formula in the way, or you'd have to really experiment over?
I'm going to make a first guess, Mel, that if you have the area enclosed inside your loop of wire by either making it an ellipse or make it a smaller diameter and re-resonating it. But by whatever means, you have the ellipse area, the enclosed area, and we resonate it and we impedance match it correctly, half the area is going to give you 6 dB less signal, is my guess.
Check it. No big deal then, in a situation, you know, like this, because, like I say, I can easily, you know, the basic loop as it is, he said you're going to lose 10 to 15 dB over a full-size antenna. I haven't found that. I haven't never seen a 15 dB difference so far. So let's say it was even 15 dB, and I can put an RF amplifier on it to give me approximately a 10 dB gain. So basically, you know, it sounds like now, like this is like something, a hidden treasure that you can come up with an antenna that possibly will work as a fantastic receiving antenna, and you could actually make it a lot more compact if I could even, you know, I could say squeeze it down to not 50%, even squeeze it down so that it only had like, say, a 3-foot spread instead of what it has right now, about 48 inches. It's right now 48, the crossbar is now 48 inches. But say if I could get down to 24 or 30 inches, you could actually stick this thing, like I say, out of the way in a corner of a room, hang it from the ceiling with a small pulley and do every manipulation with it. I'm surprised, you know, that this is like something that we have never heard much about, because it sounds like the answer to a lot of problems of receiving a takeover.
Okay, I've got a guess as to why you're getting more signal inside than from the outside antenna. And it is because you don't have as much freedom to reorient that outside antenna. Whereas the freedom you have with the inside antenna, you can peak it up for that particular ionospheric condition that particular day. That's a guess as to what I think is going on. I think there's someone else who wants to make a comment. Who is that?
Maybe me, Dick. N2KDN, just wanted to check in. I've been reading the mail a little bit off and on, and I don't have any traffic for the net, so just paying attention.
Okay. N2KDN. Do I recognize him? Oh. It's a similar set of call letters for a man that I'm looking for. You're not it yet. Okay. Join in if you want to. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, so like I said to you, how come we don't hear more about an antenna of this sort that I actually found, like I say, the last page on receiving, the last page, two pages written about it, and how possibly, you know, can I conceive in my mind, I got 272 feet of wire up in the open, a big capture area there, 45 feet up, I'm sitting with this thing in the radio shack, and most of the time, let's put it this way, without the amplifiers and all, the receiving loop is never worse than the outside full wavelength. In other words, I never say, gee, the outside is making it, you know, look like it's not even there today. It's either equal or better. This is what I can't, you know, I can't picture this in my mind. How the heck is it doing this magic that even with the, even when the signals are purely horizontal and all, and the noise level situation, forget about all that. Let's talk about just pure signal. Signals coming in 5-9 outside with the receiving loop. I put it on the inside. It's 5-9 or better. In all cases, it's either good, as good or better. This is what I can't come to grips with, Dick, over.
KD2BD.
KD2BD, but I've got a big comment on that one before we turn it over to Mr. BD, and that is the loop inside the house looks non-substantial compared to the one outside. The philosophy of what that creates is such that the average amateur doesn't want to believe, can't bring himself to believe that the internal loop, the internal to the house loop, could possibly have that much performance. isotron antenna, for all you and I know, is an extremely effective antenna, properly used. But I'll bet you they had a lot of trouble selling the product because people believe it is a temporary makeshift antenna. They can't believe it's a serious piece of hardware. Go ahead, John.
Thanks, Dick. K2RAW in the TechNet from KD2BD. Well, now, the thing is, you are getting a very substantial signal from the indoor loop. The trade-off is bandwidth. You got a much less bandwidth on the indoor loop than on the outdoor loop, so that's the real trade-off. Loops really aren't discussed that much in amateur radio. Even on 160 and 80, the common philosophy is just throw some wire up in trees and feed it with some coax and you're done. If you look at and study some of the websites that discuss the work that's being done in the loafer band, the 1750 meter band, 160 to 190 kilohertz band, you'll see primarily the antenna reception antenna of choice is a loop. An E-field whip would be the second choice. Look down at the people that are doing work in the VLF range, and they use loops almost exclusively. I, for years, have been tinkering around with LF and VLF frequency up converters, and I always understood, it was my understanding that WWVB in Fort Collins, Colorado on 60 kilohertz was one of the strongest signals on the band. I could never hear it with any of the converters I built, wires out the window, dipoles, 75-meter dipoles, I could never hear it. One day I built a loop, put a preamp on it, and put a scope on it, and studied that scope pattern for a couple of hours, tweaking the horizontal sweep speed just to get it just right so that I can see a stable waveform, and there it was. I now use a 40-turn loop that's held up by thumbtacks in the rafters of my attic, resonated with the capacitors and a trimmer, fed into a differential amplifier that feeds my frequency standard, my home-built frequency standard. And out of that loop, I think I'm getting about a millivolt of signal from a transmitter that's 1,622 miles away. Any other antenna, you'd never hear it. K2RAW in the TechNet from KD2BD.
Fantastic. And once again, you're listening to WWV, I think you said on 60 kilohertz, and when you listen to the audio demodulated from them, what does the signal-to-noise ratio sound like, or is it only Morse code at that frequency? Thank you, John.
It is a, it's kind of difficult to explain. It's a carrier that is modulated in amplitude. And the duration of those, of that change in amplitude is a pulse width modulation code, which represents the time of day, the day of the year, and et cetera. And I developed the demodulation circuitry to do that. I feed that into a PIC microcontroller, and I get a display and an LCD display. I get a serial data output, which feeds into my computer and sets the date and time on my computer. They've been doing some experiments and some changes with their modulation format, essentially increasing the modulation percentage. It did that, I think, about a year or two ago. But really fascinating stuff. The receiver I put together, frequency standard I put together, you were talking about op amps earlier. The only resonant circuit in this entire receiver is loop antenna. And I'm receiving this signal in a bandwidth of about 7 hertz. And I've got no crystal filters, no nothing. It's all done with op amps. No regeneration either. I'm demodulating the signal with I and Q demodulators down to baseband. And then I'm using low-pass filters, op amp low-pass filters to filter off the noise and just give me the signal that I'm looking for the I and Q detectors. Works out very well. K2RAW on the TechNet from KD2BD.
Question for John.
Oh, go ahead. I got questions, too. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, John, this is Frank again. I didn't do this seriously, but I tried to do a little listening down there at 60 kilohertz, and I had a big problem. I'm in New Jersey with WABC at 770 and WOR at 710. I was getting the Intermod 60 kilohertz product from them. The IMD.
Sounds like a dynamic range issue. Yeah, actually, you live in the town where I used to live. I moved away about 25 years ago. Well, a loop, I think, would since it's so narrowly resonant, would probably cut down on that effect a bit.
Okay.